Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to the In The Truck podcast. Today we have a special episode. The great and powerful Ed Lattimore is coming on to discuss, I don't know what, we'll figure it out. So without further ado.
Hello?
Hey Ed?
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's going on, man?
Everything is going very good, man. Very good. What about yourself?
Not too bad. It's been a kind of a crazy couple weeks, but otherwise.
Remind me again what part of the country you're in?
I'm in upstate New York.
So maybe you haven't been getting the rain and the heat we've been getting. It's a really weird combination.
It rained this morning for a little bit, but it's been really hot
lately. Remember, I live in Pittsburgh, a city that is quite literally built into a valley, and we're getting flooded and having power outages and record rain 2 days in a row. I mean, it really is nuts. It's truly a summertime that will sprout quite a lot of trees.
That's crazy. Yeah, the flooding stuff can get pretty terrifying.
But yeah, so how's hello? Okay, cool.
I'm here.
Heard a cool little beeping sound.
A couple years ago we had a flood here where right around the time the snow was melting, we got a big rain like all at once. And there's a river sort of south of where I live. And there's 3-4 bridges that go across it. And I was talking to my wife on the phone. I was at work. And I was like, what are y'all doing? And she said, oh, we're down looking at the waterfall because there's so much water coming from the flood. And I said, you know, you realize you're on the other side of the river, right? And she goes, yeah. And I'm like, and they just closed two bridges upstream from us. You might want to think about back on this side. And she made it. As they were shutting the bridge
and you
down.
Guys live in, you know, I've been to upstate New York, the Finger Lakes region is where I was at. I don't remember the exact area, but I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I remember. I didn't have any cell phone reception. I do remember that, but I thought the place was beautiful.
That's right. Anyways, whenever I travel, people say, where are you from? And I say, New York. And they're like, oh, that must be so exciting. I'm like, no, not that part.
You know, I was just in New York City the last weekend to do a seminar with Mike Sarnovic and AJ Cortez. And I was like, man, this is like maybe a town that barely has 500,000 people. But it was too much for me, man. It was a lot. So many buildings, so much concrete, so many people, so much congestion. I wasn't ready for it.
I'm not a fan. So, and for us, see up here, for us, we have the added element that they send all their corrupt politicians to the state legislature to make our lives difficult.
Ah, okay. So you're close to Albany?
I am. I'm about 20 miles north of Albany.
Wow, you're north. Goodness. Hot and cold, the extremes of the temperate climate.
That's right.
Not really.
So you said you were doing a seminar. Was that like a boxing seminar? Was that?
Well, it was a mindset seminar. You know, Mike Cernovic invited us to come and speak on topics. And, you know, We had a really good time. People were really satisfied, but we learned quite a lot because, you know, there were a lot of mistakes made. Nothing that ruined the user experience, at least, you know, from my feedback and my knowledge. But everything from just how we spaced out the timing of the speakers, I ended up going over. Because what you learn, the type of people who are really good at doing these things, and I think part of it to get really good at speaking in front of people, you have to get so, I mean, you just got to love being up there. You can't be up there going, oh, goodness, I can't wait to get down from stage. You really got to learn to love or at least feel comfortable up there. And when you get comfortable in a place, you don't notice the time. I had no idea. Apparently, I spoke for a little over 2 hours. And I was having a good time. People come back asking questions. So it's not like I was drooling on. So we learned that, and, you know, we're planning, me, AJ, and Tanner Ghazi, we're planning our next seminar. We're planning that one to be, it looks like, in Utah. And we are planning, you know, things about the length of presentations and topics to go over everything. We're doing that ahead of time and really chopping that up so we produce an even better product and experience.
Well, you know, that's like a live and learn deal. You got to do it to see.
Oh, for sure.
I think a lot of things are like
and,
that.
And,
you know?
And at the end of the day, right, and this is something I wish everyone really understood and got, is that the technical details and the technical execution, you know, that's important. That's what takes you to the top. But just to get started, you need to put good content and solid content out. You know, people don't remember, like right now, you know, I get people asking me all the time about why my website looks so nice and how do we get that done. And I'm like, dude, you gotta understand. When I first started doing anything online, my website was terrible. I mean, it really well, it was ugly, dude. There's no other way to put it. But it got traffic and it built me up and it got people signed up on my list. Because the content, you know, was good enough. And it wasn't even – and when I say it was good enough, what I mean is, like, you know, now that I understand, like, readability and SEO and things like that, I didn't understand any of those things. I just knew writing, right? And so it's not like it was web optimized. It was just stuff you wanted to say and you had an audience and you said it to them. And if you were, you know, if you were hitting off and you were resonating and people were feeling stuff, you would grow. And that's what people forget. You don't need to jump with the bells and whistles. Prove that you have something to say when you first start. And then if
well, I think a lot of people get stuck in this idea, like, okay, I want to do this, whatever it is, like have a website. And then they think of how they want it to be. And they're like, okay, well, that's going to take this much time or cost this much money, or I need to meet with these people first. And until all that falls in place, they're like, I'll do nothing. And then it never falls in place.
Right. You know, I don't remember who said this, and maybe I'm getting it wrong. This is just how I remember it, colored with, like, my experience. One of the worst things you can do, right, if you're about to – you say you want to get in shape and want to work out, you don't need to go buy new stuff. You just need to start working out. Believe me, when you get to the point where your stuff is not working for you, you will know, and you will have to go replace it. But you got to earn that point. You got to feel like, yo, I got to do this, as opposed to just buying some new stuff. Because I really think, you know, and I know this happens to me, so I'm very careful now about how much information I ingest and learn. How I want to make a living, how I'm making a living now, how I want to continue making a living, is producing valuable things for people in different formats, you know, that they'll pay money for. Well, I can keep I can read how to do that, and I can see other people do it. And the brain is funny, man, because I really feel like I've accomplished something if I went through a lesson. And I'm like, hold up, you didn't accomplish a thing. You didn't create anything. You're no closer. So I have to force myself to just go and sit and just start and dig from the gritty, grimy bottom and produce. And then once you've produced enough gritty, grimy stuff, you have this big mound, you can go, okay, I can shave away and I have something to work with. And then you learn how to execute stuff. I think the best thing I did, you know, people write me all the time and tell me they find typos in my book. And I'm like, look, man, you got to understand, we produce this thing on a shoestring budget. And I'm really, given the circumstance that happened in my life halfway through the writing of the book, we kind of get rusted. And by we, I mean me. There ain't really no team. The point is, though, I put a book out and I put my heart in. So it's not like I just put, you know, trash out. I mean, I did the best I could with the tools I have for editing. I'll be able to do a lot better for the next one. But imagine if I just kept saying, you know, I'm going to just wait until I have this, that, or no, I had to find a way to get that thing done and get it out there, because now that it's out there, it's there. And it served me so well as a calling card. It's gotten me different places and different interviews. And people go, oh, you have a thing like this done. That's so much more important. Execution is better than perfection. And people will use perfection as an excuse to keep from executing every time.
Right, right. And I think even just to get started, you know, it's one of those things where, what do they say, like the most difficult move at the gym is the step out
right,
the door.
Or the heaviest way to the gym is the front door or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, I think people come up with a lot of reasons to not try.
Right.
And not reasons for other people. Like, they convince themselves, like, oh, I'll do it later, oh, I can't, oh, whatever. And I think, like, one of the things that's so powerful about your message to me, like, because I follow you on social media, I pay attention to what you're saying to people. I think one of the things that's most powerful to me, or what I can relate to, is this idea of, like, no, you got to get started and do something. Oh. And it might not turn into what you want, or it might, I mean, not to say don't have a plan or don't think about it, but there's part of the equation is action. And even if it's imperfect action, it still has to be taken.
That is, you know, at the end of the day, the most important thing, in my opinion, is to do something. You know, like I got this degree hanging on the wall, right? I got this physics degree, and I'm really, really proud of it. I'm really happy. Right, but the last time we talked, I did not have that degree. I was almost done with it, but I didn't have it. And now that I have it, right, I have done a thing, right? I put and took some action steps. And the ultimate goal was to get the degree. But the things I had to do along the way to ensure I achieve that goal have opened so many doors and so many, you know, different things that I don't even need it. You know, I went to do it to improve my ability to earn money. And then I discovered that I'm really good at a bunch of other things. And it's introduced me to so many other people. But it all started because I was like, wow, my situation in life is terrible. And I took some action to fix it. You know, so at the end of the day, action rules all, you know.
Well, yeah, and I did pretty much exactly this. My degree is not in physics. It's not nearly as impressive, but I have a degree in economics, and I decided my career kind of hit a wall. I got really impatient, and so I was like, well, I'd started years ago. I need to go back and finish. So I set out to do that. I went back to go finish my degree and work the whole time, and was working on a number of different things. And by the time I graduated and I was applying for jobs in my field, I was like, oh, they're not going to pay me anywhere near as much as I make now doing all this other stuff. So I'm like, oh, forget it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, so, but the action, you know, it's cool. You know, I know for sure, like, I wouldn't be a vet. I wouldn't have never got it. I would not have the opportunities to tutor that I have. My mindset about learning just would be non-existent. I probably wouldn't have gotten to Twitter, at least not to the way I am now, which just seems completely unrelated. And I always say one of the cool things, and just as a specific thing to me, and then we extrapolate from that, one of the, you know, people talk to me and follow me and are interested in what I have to say because I did that. There's a lot of, you know, the self-improvement space is relatively crowded. Right. And I would even go as far as to say, you know, absolutely crowded. It's probably the most crowded space on the internet. So how does one, you know, stand out and be different? Well, first, you know, all these guys are preaching.
Don't be fake.
Yeah. Well, that's a big one. In terms of distinguishment, you know, one of the big messages is, you know, these guys that they're all fitness or finance, whatever. I'm like, nah, man, I'm a freaking scientist, right? Well, I study science and how to think that way, and it allows people to have conversations with me who otherwise, you know, they don't feel like they can relate to the other guys. You know, I get so many guys who write to me who are, you know, talking about STEM or they're in school or they're, you know, guys in the tech industry, and they don't feel intimidated or out of their element having that conversation with me. And likewise, I don't feel out of my element having that conversation with them. So everyone wins. That's just me specifically, but for a bigger, for a more general rule, right, is that if you can be, you know, if you can do a thing and just make it through, right? Because a lot of guys don't make it through. They make it somewhat do a lot of different things, or they do a thing that everyone else has done, which you know degrades the value when more people do it. But if you can do something, you know, unique and useful, and going back to school at 27 is freaking in and of itself. Just you know, some people don't think that's impossible, whatever, but you do it. And
yeah, you can do it.
And then you open yourself up to just be a more relatable human being. You know, I talk about this a lot when guys ask me about Twitter. I mean, there's a lot of technical things you can do, but at the end of the day, you know, you be authentic, but you be an interesting person as well. And part of being an interesting person, interesting people do challenging things and they learn from them. And they develop a life that looks so unique that people can't help but be interested.
Well, I think if your number one goal is to be popular on social media, like if you're set out, like, I want 100,000 Twitter followers, you're never going to get 100,000 Twitter followers. Because, right? Like, you have to, you know, I understand the idea of having a goal, having a bigger audience. Like, I have that goal. But, like, I understand how it works and how my brain works and what interests me enough to know, like, okay, if you want to catch the attention of a lot of people, you need to create interesting content.
Right.
And, like, if your objective in everything is like, oh, I want to get a lot of attention, it just comes off that way. Like people see it. Like I know a guy who decided in his early 30s he wanted to be a life coach, but he had never done anything like really interesting or difficult. And I thought, like, well, why would anybody? Right. You know what I mean? Like I like him. He's a nice guy, but like I had done athletically, I had gone further than him. Educationally, I had gone further than him. Professionally, I had gone further than him. And I'm not some hugely accomplished guy. Something like, why would anybody let you coach their life? Like, you got to go have a life first. I think there's a lot of that, especially with fitness. There's a lot of these guys, it seems like, in the digital space, they're like fitness and diet gurus who never achieved anything athletically. And I think, like, who's listening to these people?
Right. But you know, we also live in, you know, we live in the glitter is gold age. Everything you see is obviously what it is, in other words. And I think that, you know, the rise of that are one of the things that greatly contributes to it anyhow, is Instagram. And I think that's why I really favor Twitter. I mean, now I'm learning the power of Instagram. But you can post pictures, right? This is very revealing as I talk about this. Compared to Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, the other, you know, big ones, and the way humans process information and make sense of the world, Instagram is probably the one that you can get away with deception for the longest amount of time. Because, you know, if I tweet enough to generate traction and be interactive, I'm going to have to reveal. So I'm going to have to say things. I'm going to have to speak. If I'm a goon or an idiot,
right,
you know, or if I'm just quoting stuff, eventually someone's gonna you know, catch it, right? If I catch it, the words are not gonna be consistent, the words are gonna seem too sharp and too polished, and they're gonna Google it, where I can't tell you how many times someone's Googled it, like, what book did you get that from? I'm like, that's me, man, you can go look it up. I said that. You said that enough, and they're like, right. Oh, man, this guy's the truth, right? But you know, on Facebook, there's a whole word plus picture element. Facebook started, there wasn't, sure. Now you can share a little more pictures, and they've adopted the whole story idea, but it was words. It was telling a story. So once again, there's this whole story element. And YouTube is a unique beast in the fact that, yeah, sure, it is visual, but it's, you know, you're creating videos. You are speaking, and you are showing pictures. And it's part, and it's integral to the experience. You know, Instagram, look, I have to use any word. Right. You just post. I can't tell you how many pictures I've seen or how many accounts I've seen where it's just a girl showing a bunch of ass pics every other pic. And right, she's got.
Those are the most popular accounts on Instagram.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, so you can do a lot just by showing pictures. Just showing. Look, if you was like some weird, skeezy pervert, you could really, you know, create some type of picture. These camera phones are incredible. where you just got a bunch of pictures of different girls' butts. You don't even know, man. Just posting it, being a weirdo. Or you could go on and post it all on the less, like, creepy note. You could head down to the car lot every day and just take pictures of different cars or you getting in them. And you could really create an illusion. It's very difficult to do that when you're dealing with words and a person's cerebral interaction and how they think about things. Pictures, yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I think from watching you, like, why I relate to you or why a lot of people, why what you say resonates is because I think it's not fabricated or manufactured. Like, I totally understand in this space, in the podcasting space, I could have a much bigger audience if I told some line, like some prefabricated line, and I screamed and yelled all the time and whatever. But I'm not that guy, and I'm a thoughtful person, and the thought of doing that kind of makes me ill. And I think there's a space for thoughtful content or for nuanced content. And I think that's, like, when you come across, like, you're not a motivational speaker. You're trying to talk about, like, how to approach problems and how to think about things differently. And it was funny earlier today. I think it was earlier today. There was a guy that got mad at you for saying that you could move if you didn't like where you live.
It was a very interesting interaction. I thought we were having a debate, and then I realized, nah, he was just – look, because I'll debate with anyone, but I have very very strict rules for me to consider a debate. First of all, you know, we're approaching each other's ideas. And I'll give you a pass the first time you reference race, because that's all you can see about me, or sex, because that's all you can see about me. But when we discuss ideas and you go back to innate traits as opposed to how a person is thinking and criticize and attack and battle that, you know, then we're having an argument. And he wanted to have an argument. I thought I was having a debate. So I kind of, you know, ended up ignoring that and then erasing that guy's messages. But I know I struck a nerve with him because after a while, that's the other cool thing about words. You learn how to strike nerves, man, because he didn't go bother anybody else. But I really got that guy arguing back for a while, and I wasn't, you know. It was funny, but you were saying that guy was arguing about, you know, I said you can move, you know, like where you live, you can move. He sometimes a racist.
What a crazy hill to die on. Like, was his, and he never came out and said it, but essentially his position by arguing with you at all on that point was that you can't move.
Right.
Well, of course you can move. Like, that's so stupid. Move. Go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, then I dig into it because here's the thing. Once you become adept at profiling, you effectively so first of all, it's all an expected value game. You learn what things mean a certain thing and the odds of those being correct, and you can make it, you can bet on it. And you're not going to be correct 100% of the time, you know, because there are anomalies and exceptions. But those are anomalies and exceptions. So by definition, you're going to be correct more often than not. Once I pegged what that guy was or who he was, that's what got under his skin, is that I pegged that he was one of two things, and he was exactly one of the things I said he was, and it really fired him up. So this is the fun.
Well, it's crazy. But, I mean, it goes back to, so I'm like a rural or somewhat rural, like, white guy. And I've heard my whole life, because I'm very conservative, you know, I don't want to pay taxes. I don't want anything. Like, I just want to be left alone. And there's a lot of people in the rural parts of America that feel that way. And I hear all the time from city liberal, not to make this political, but it's like city liberals, that conservative rural people vote against their own interests. And it's like, you're saying to me, like, my interest should be to get money from that I didn't earn. And like, that, you know, there are people a whole lot poorer than me that if you went and asked them, like, do you want a dime you didn't earn? They'd tell you no. They don't want that. So it's like, it's almost the same idea. And like yesterday, there was this lady, I don't know if you saw this yesterday when she deleted it, but there was this lady, Kimberly Johnson, I guess she's like a poet or an author or something. And she put out this quote about how she saw, an affluent black man driving a BMW, and there was a NRA sticker on the car and a Tea Party sticker on the car, and that left her, and then she goes, that left me very confused. And like right away, everybody's just like, you're a racist. And my, you know, myself included, because I like to troll a little bit. And it was fascinating to watch, because she's like, no, I'm not. And then just persisted this idea that, like, why would a black man want freedom and low taxes? Why would he vote against his interests?
I said they were like, and these people don't realize it, man. It's so funny, and it's why I've in my personal life, because once again, I mean, I maintain at the end of the day that I probably have some real political interests, but it's been ruined so thoroughly by the process in our country that it's for all intents and purposes, you know, I don't have any. Like, I mean, but I'm very aware of the inextricable link between one's political views and how one views certain races and certain categories. And I'll tell you what, it's a little secret amongst successful black guys. You know, a lot of us lean right, man, just by definition or by circumstance, really. And one of the reasons that happens, look, some guy, I won't say his name, I don't know how big he is, but he was having a conversation with me, and he goes, look, you know, I was in a bad spot, and when I got from the conservative side, they were the people who wanted to see me get back on my feet and have things happen. You know, everyone else, you know, any of my liberal-minded friends or liberal-minded people who were in a position to help me, they wanted me to effectively blame some circumstance. And what you got to realize is when you get, as they say, quote-unquote woke, that mindset is effectively what enslaves a person. If they don't think that they can get free, if they don't think they can take control of their life, they're going to always blame somebody from putting them there, then they can't rise. I mean, how could you? How could you think you could move forward if all you see and all you believe is that it's somebody else's fault and the system's out to get you? And that's why a lot of us say that these people who claim that they are not racist, you know, I'm guessing this is a very similar situation to the Kimberly Johnson or Jones person, whatever her name is. She, in her mind, she really didn't see it as racism, but it really is, right? You know?
Right.
Because that means you don't believe that this black dude could actually be in a position to make money and to have an interest like that. And so it's so funny and weird, man. You get caught up in these. Well, here's what I've learned is that, you know, there's the old saying, and now, you know, I'm not really talking about politics, but I guess it's a political lean. The old saying, man, the left eats themselves. I don't know if that applies to the other side. What I do know is that when you start making a thing about identity, that you can't win that, because not everyone's identity. Look, two people could look exactly the same. You could take two black women, and when it's identity, right, they're two black women. But one of them women from the hood is going to have a very different thought mindset process than another one, you know, who's from like Nassau County or something like that. It's going to be a very different way of looking at the world, and they're not going to intersect. This is not going to happen. But the powers that be would love it. But I mean, I don't think there's a conspiracy. I just think it's the human mind to simplify people down to these very easy boxes to put in. But people, and now there's so many people, you can't really do that.
Well, years ago, like in the 90s, they came out with this study, you know, in the midst of all this talk about, you know, I always say, like, America is not racist. There are racists in America, but like big businesses aren't racist, colleges aren't racist, whatever. So there's all this talk about, like, America's so racist. And then they came up with a study in New York City that the population group that had the highest percentage of business ownership was Jamaican immigrants.
And I was like, oh, man, they tried to sweep that. Today they try and sweep that under the rug.
Yeah, like, well, but they just come with a different mindset. Like, it's not the color of their skin that matters. It's the mindset and what they want to do and how much they're willing to sacrifice. And that's why I think, like, not that you speak to one group or another, but it's where it's helpful for people to recognize, like, hey, you know, you can take control of the situation and make it better.
Like, yeah, you know, and
Jordan Peterson was talking about the problem with the identity politics is that as soon as you divide the world into oppressor and oppressed and start going after the oppressors, there's infinite groups of oppressors. Like, once you get done with the first one, you can just find another one and another one and another one. You know, it's a never end. I think that's where that left eats itself thing comes from, because it's never, you can never go far enough. Like, oh, you're white, so that's no good. Oh, you're a man, like, you're male, good. Oh, you're whatever, you know, you just keep going.
Yeah, there's no one, there's no end to that. You're right. You know, so a group is like, oh, okay, we're all intersectional. It's the old joke, you know, LGBTQ, and you just keep adding, and now they want to add P, and now half the world. It's a very weird time we live in. There's one group of people who are legitimately, you know, trying to group pedophilia as a normal sexual behavior.
Thank you.
And that is what it's come to.
I've been talking about this for over a year, like, that it's coming, that they're going to try to normalize pedophilia. And all these people keep telling me, oh, you're crazy. And here the last couple of months, it's just ramped up more and more and more.
Right. And, you know, and thank goodness there are somewhat enough rational people who play the identity politics game where I see, and they're like, can we get this pee out of here? That's not a thing. Like, and in that same vein, I was just talking about this with the guy less than an hour ago. There's a clip I shared, and I very rarely retweet or share anything related to politics, but I guess ICE had broken up this house and they arrested a bunch of immigrants in Oakland, California. They were protesting the immigrant, protesting ICE, I mean. Turns out ICE was there because these motherfuckers was trafficking kids. And they were so in their mind about the fact that it was ICE that they couldn't think about, wow, wait a second, these some bad hombres, man. They gotta go. To focus on, you know, oh goodness, we're gonna break this group up, or someone that is going to be the oppressor.
I was actually talking. I have a guy who follows me on Twitter who I don't think we agree on much of anything except that we both agree like the other person has integrity. And he was talking about something about Trump being something Trump said was racist or whatever. And I was like, it's funny because it was a thing about immigrants or whatever. And I was like, when I read that, I hear a guy saying, hey, in this group of immigrants, there's some really bad people we need to do something about. And he sees it as like, oh, he's saying all this whole group of people are bad. And I'm like, it's funny how like two people can look at the same thing. But yeah, like what you're saying, like what goes on and like ICE and all this stuff, like some of the stuff is really, really bad. And I feel like a lot of these people live these sheltered lives where they don't even understand how evil the world
is. Oh, real. Sure. You should have seen the protesters. Clearly middle class, or as I say, you know, the fallen angels from the trust fund decided they were going to go live the hipster life. Clearly these kinds of individuals, not people that are like, you know, in the know and know what it's about, which is very interesting too, because if you play the identity politics game and you want to like try and look at me in that regard, and this is where I get a lot of friction, or at least the most friction for real, is that on paper, you know, I should be one of these loud blithering idiots, man. Like, black guy, grew up in inner city housing project, grew up poor, but I don't think that way at all. And furthermore, I can articulate my position. I mean, you got to start. You either got to admit you think one way, or we're going to come to some logical conclusions that you don't really like. And it really bugs these people, because unlike everyone else, or at least unlike many people who have a certain opinion about one thing, I've earned my opinion. I've been there. It's like what I say, I don't argue with vets about politics. At the end of the day, they put their lives, especially war vet, they put their money where their mouth is. They can think whatever the hell they want, as far as I'm concerned, you know, because at the end of the day, they were willing to die to defend that right, whether you know, you agree or disagree. You know, do you believe it so much that you're going to strap up? Most people won't. I think the stat is like 1% of the population serves.
Yeah, it's somewhere right around there. It's a really, really small percentage.
So it's we just live in this crazy world, man. The best thing, you know what my plan is? My plan is right now, I actually sent an email out about this the other day or yesterday. It's called my 4 levels of freedom email. And I'm firmly at level 2, and that pretty much means that I can live anywhere in the world, well, 90% of the world I want to, and not have to live in the ghetto. And I don't want. And my girl is a Portuguese citizen. We love Portugal, and I'm gonna just get away, and I'm gonna just, you know, when it gets bad, I'm gonna just marry her and then go away. There we go, and then, and wake up every day on the beach and nobody cares, and I'm not gonna worry about this. It's just insane, man. Like it is insane. We are the most prosperous country, and people are fighting over what the point when people really should argue for pedophilia, man, or argue against self-determination and improving your life. Look, man, you don't know anybody that's been a slave. I don't know anybody that's been a slave. That's not to say that we're not effects from slavery to me. You know, but I think we can say, right, and this is where I was going to go, but eventually I just let the guy go. You know, at what point do we say, okay, it's been long enough, or how long are we going to keep blaming slavery for everything, right?
I don't know. Well, like, for me, sorry.
I keep going.
No, like, I come at it from the other side because obviously I'm white, so I catch that, like, you understand slavery thing. Like, so my family's been in upstate New York since the 1640s. There's been no slavery up here. Like, we didn't own slavery. Right. And the rest of my family that came over here was Irish. They were slaves. You know, like, people forget that there were white slaves in America. So it's like,
oh, man. And don't you, and you better not ever mention the fact that the slavery for the whites on blacks, it was the Islam on black, the Arabs. Don't ever mention that shit.
Well, that's still going on.
Man, people are so ridiculous. But that's the beauty. That is, in many ways, a sign of beauty. You know, when we got to start worrying about real problems, getting bad. I'm doing is putting a positive spin on things. When we have to start worrying about, like when it really becomes an issue, like, yo, man, a lot of black people are randomly disappearing, you know, like,
right.
And the last time they were seen is with the police, and right, and we don't even see, you know, there's not even a Black Lives Matter. It's like, where are the black lives at? You know, then we got a real problem, right?
Yeah.
But right, you know, we just get, you know, the Matrix does a wonderful commentary on this, and it really, if you haven't seen the Matrix in a while, I think the first movie is brilliant, and you can think what you want about the second and the third. I'm on the fifth. But the first movie is brilliant in its commentary. And there's a scene when Agent Smith is trying to get the codes out of Morpheus, and he's got them up on the roof of some skyscraper before Neo comes and rescues him. That cool scene they made a big deal about when he's with the gun. Right. Well, what Agent Smith says to Neo to Morpheus, he says to him, he's like, you know, the first Matrix was designed to be a paradise. No problems, none. People just be happy all day. But they rejected that because it was too peaceful. They needed problems.
Right.
And right now, we're at a... I mean, think about it. We don't have... I'm standing here right now, walking out of my kitchen, talking to you, and you probably about 500 miles away on a cellular device, on a handheld device. I'm looking at a push notification. I just got something delivered to my home, and I'm going to, like, go grab some meat that was already caught, slaughtered, and it's gonna be a good fat cut too. And after we get up, the problems. If I get sick, I got a medicine cabinet that's gonna take care of 80% of anything I have. The other 15% of the remaining 20, I can just go to the hospital, or I'd rather go to MedExpress, and it's the last 5%, which rarely happens. I'm gonna have to go see a doctor.
Right.
We're just on a different world. We don't have real problems anymore.
Well, yeah,
biggest problem.
It's a whole bunch of people with full stomachs arguing about nonsense.
Yeah, right. Full stomach. Come on, man. Do you know how people, fortunately, we haven't seen this one pop up in a while. But you know how hard it is to starve in this country? I mean, even if you have no money, we throw food away, man. Yeah. We throw food away because it looks funny. Like, yeah. I didn't know this. This back before I knew that John Oliver was like this crazy, you know, super political guy during the political scene. He actually put in a lot of good segments. And one of the things I really liked, he talked about how we throw away food, how much food we throw away, because it doesn't look like it would be displayed. It would display well. It sell well.
Right.
It's perfectly good. It eats just fine. It tastes fine. Nothing wrong with it.
Right.
I'm like, man, that's the world we live in. You know, we got refrigeration. Think about like when you were talking about your people in the 1600s. There wasn't no refrigeration, man.
No.
You had to catch it and kill it that day. Yeah. Maybe so you get another day. Like that's it.
I was reading this story because they used to use salt to preserve things, right? So I was reading this story. The king of, I think it was Mali in Africa, where they had a ton of salt. He made he made his pilgrimage to Mecca. This is like in the 1700s, 1800s. The guy was so rich. He was just throwing money around, like throwing gold coins around because he didn't care.
Mansa Musa, I think.
That he ruined the world economy. all of a sudden, everybody had all this money, and it became worthless because it was like this huge inflation problem caused by one guy. So yeah, I mean that's like refrigeration's a big deal.
Yeah, you know, I think somebody said it best. The worst person today wouldn't trade places with the king 300 years ago.
Amen.
In terms of personal convenience, it's just not. It's not even on the same level, man.
Well, I talk about So I talk about white privilege sometimes, and it makes me upset, the whole idea of it. And there, I mean, obviously part of it is like somebody's accusing me of something, but part of it is like my grandfather was born in a house with a dirt floor. And there's nobody alive today in this country, no matter what race, background, immigrant status, whatever, that's as poor as my grandfather was in 1925. So it's like,
right.
Right. You got to make decisions. And maybe you're not where I'm at. Maybe you're not where my dad ended up at, whatever. But you can make good choices and sacrificial decisions, and your grandkids could be better off than me.
Oh, for sure.
But it might not happen for you. You know what I mean? You might not see it. You might not live it, whatever. But you can set the ball rolling in that direction rather than sit around and complain about life's not fair.
And that is... At the end of the day, we live in a period of unprecedented, and not just a period, but a location, because it ain't like this around the world.
Right.
We live in a time and place of unprecedented social mobility, social and economic mobility. I mean, literally, we see it all the time. A person's born nothing, and by the time they're 40, you know, they're in the top 1%. Earners of the world, not just because all the top earners live in this country, you know, of the world.
I forget the statistic, but it's somewhere, and I'm gonna get it wrong, and somebody's gonna make fun of me, but it's somewhere around Americans at some time in their life will be in the 1%.
Oh, I think it's higher than that. I think it's 50.
Yeah, so like, you know, a lot of people don't stay there, it comes and goes, but you know, a lot of people do well here and there, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, so we got a lot to be grateful for. We got so much to be grateful for. You know, the Matrix is bugging out, man. We rejecting, we're finding things to argue about, you know?
Right.
So that's where that goes.
But I think there's like, and this is something that really you do speak to, and you speak to well, like there's this epidemic of it's not my fault. I don't have a role in my own life. I can't move if I want to. I can't succeed if I want to. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. I think that's killing a lot of people.
And you know, the best thing I've got for that, right? Because I mean, I every now and then I'll say something, and I'm just absolutely floored at the blowback I get, because I'm like, okay, because you know, like you got a database. You use social media long enough, you got a database of like what's likely to ruffle feathers and bring you some attention. And
right.
My database is pretty damn big at this point. But I still get surprised, sure, man. And every now and then I'll say something, and it's always about, it's never criticizing anyone, you know, like the moving idea. It's not criticizing. Or the idea of, I said something about how guys need to move out as soon as possible just to learn how to suffer a little bit. And, you know, it's not really a financial, it's the grit, it's becoming a man kind of deal. And I got so much blowback from that. And all these are ideas of self-sufficiency. And life is so easy now. The self-sufficiency is controversial. How crazy is that, man?
Well, I think that's the Christian idea of conviction, right? Like the Holy Spirit convicts you. Nobody's telling you it's you, but you feel it in your heart. Like I think deep down inside, all men understand that their role is supposed to be as independent people who provide and protect for the less fortunate or the vulnerable. And when they're not doing that and somebody points it out, they get upset. Because I get kicked back on the idea that men should get married and have kids and be a dad and a husband. And you act like it's so easy. It's not so easy to do that. Like, no, it is. Like, it's just like everything else. It's just a decision.
Yeah. And it really, everything, people have a big problem being called out on, like, taking responsibility because we want to believe that we're the agents of our own life and choice. And this is true. This is not at all a knock on somebody's ability and freedom to choose. What this is a knock on is whether a person is behaving in a way that is going to make them happier and better or more productive. I mean, look, if you just want to lay around and be a piece of trash, man, that's cool. Like, it's not for – not every path is for every
– Yeah, but I don't think anybody really wants that.
No, and that's where I was going is that are you choosing this or are you settling for it? People have an incredible ability to decide or to settle and then to make it seem like that's the choice. And then the problem is we live in a day and age where ideas propagate so quickly. I mean, I remember 10 years ago reading an article that the average age of marriage or I think first child, one or the other, for a woman had jumped and had moved up 4 years over the past decade. This was 10 years ago, so somewhere in the 2000s.
Right. So now, I actually just did the research for this for a podcast last week. In 1960, the average age for a woman to be married was 20, and the average age today for a woman to be married is 27.
Yeah, and that's the average, man. Like, and here, people don't understand when they hear the math, right? They don't understand what average means, right? And I'm assuming that they're factoring in women that do get married, not ones that don't. Otherwise, because you can't, you know, put zero.
Yeah, so it's the average age of a woman at the time of her first wedding. So women who never get married aren't even in the picture.
So what that means is that you have this is all data, and they came up with a number. We don't know what quartile that number sits in. We don't know if that data skews left or right. All we know is that when we add up all the ages, you know, for example, you could have, say, 10 women and two of them get married for the first time at 50 and the rest of them, all eight of them get married for the first time at 25, right? And the number is going to look crazy. And, well, it's not going to look crazy, but it'll look closer to what's the number? It'll look close to the lower number than the higher number. If you flip those numbers around, it's going to do the other thing. But we don't know exactly where it sits. But what it more than likely, if I was to like look around and use my eyes and judge the scenario, what I'm guessing is that a lot more women are getting married probably over 30, and there's still some pocket outliers where chicks are getting married at like 19, 20. Pulling it down just a little bit. But the fact that it moved up to 27 is incredible.
Well, yeah, and it means a lot for – I mean, it means a lot of things. You know, it means that they're having less children, fewer children.
Speaking of children, check this out. You know, our fertility rate is, you know, beyond – below replacement right now. But there's one group – all age groups are having fewer children – with the notable exception of women of over 35, they're now having more children than they were a decade ago. And you know, once again, I always like to look at, I'm an optimist at heart. I try to find the positive interpretation to that. And ultimately what that means, we have incredible health care. And it probably means that fewer children are being born into shitty situations, but it likely means when adjusted for income, that, or rather when compared to income, that while one group is overall is having more children and another group and the other groups overall having less, that these small pockets, there probably are fewer women who are poor but having a lot more children, and that doesn't bode for anyone. Have you ever seen Idiocracy? That's exactly what happens. Right.
I think of that. We're creeping ever closer to watering the crops with Gatorade.
Oh yeah. You know what's funny? The first time I watched that movie, I was getting ready for a final, and I was just up, and I said, you know, I keep hearing about this movie. Let me finally watch it. And I ended up watching it at like 2 a.m. I was like, wow, this is really brilliant. I mean, this is brilliant, man. Like, this is where society's going.
Yeah. Yeah. Just follow the trend to its logical conclusion.
Yeah, and then I love to we get to the end, and he's like, time machine. And he gets there, and it's a rod. And in my mind, I'm like, of course these people were idiots. There's no way they invented time. They figured out time travel.
Right. So, have you ever heard of the comedian Michael?
Yeah, I've heard of Michael Ian Black.
All right, so he came out last week and said he's going to write a book on masculinity, but of course it's going to be like masculinity is toxic and evil, and you know that from that perspective.
Right.
So I decided, even though I didn't necessarily want to, I feel now called to write a book on masculinity from a positive perspective.
So as an author,
what are the pitfalls I'm going to fall into in this process? Or how did you publish, maybe is what I should ask.
I just looked and I found out that Amazon did publish on the POD, publish on demand. You upload files and everything, and every time someone orders, they ship it out. Or they download it on their Kindle. It really is
so you don't have like a stockpile of books in your house.
No, man, this is year 2018, bro.
I'm a dinosaur.
No. And it really blows my mind that people, you're not the first person even close to ask me this. It blows my mind that people still ask me this. And they still think that they need to do it a certain way. And I'm like, look, if you have, like, for example, my next book, I made the decision, maybe for the next one after that, because at this point, I know I could get someone to publish my next book. In fact, I've already been approached, because I have a base so big that I'd have to just say, you know, screw my audience for me not to make money. And I really understand how to reach out and expand my network. I'm really doing that right now in preparation for my next book. See, last book, there wasn't even any prep time. I mean, now I know what I'm doing. I'm gonna sell 10,000 copies of this thing the first month. That's my goal. Now, what I do and what I recommend everyone do for real, I mean, unless you got like a King Kong base and you can actually go and talk to somebody and be like, look, you want publishers, give me an advance. I mean, if that's the game you're playing. But for everybody else who's on a shoestring or effectively a shoestring budget, whether that be financial or a fan base or marketing knowledge, Amazon CreateSpace lets you create you just upload your files, and then you upload the Kindle, and then you'll mess the ISBN. You'll write Amazon to put it together, so that when they click on your, like when you go to my thing and it says, you know, the Kindle version or the paperback version, you got to remember when you upload it, it doesn't do that automatically. You have to write to Amazon and tell them to mess the ISBNs because they're the same book. And they'll be like, oh, Okay, great. And okay. Then we'll do it after like 2 hours. So, or 2 days. That's what I'm going to say. But yeah, man, my whole thing is like, I mean, it's self-published as you can get. And I'm really proud of myself for pushing forward and figuring it out, because it just opened up so much. And it, and here's the thing. Here's why I think everyone should try self-publishing. Because, you know, we live in an age of no gatekeepers. And now you really, if you're willing to do the work and build your following and work on your network and learn the algorithms or whatever, you can do well. You know, I talk to a lot of authors because I'm learning from them and they're learning from me. But a lot of the authors who make, you know, the kind of money I want to make from self-publishing within a year, they don't have even they literally don't have 1% of the followers that I have, right? But they understood how to work the game from a different angle. So I'm learning all kinds of things from all kinds of guys. So I really make this next one blow up and pop. But there's many different ways to go about it. You don't have to be a big name. You don't even have to really have a name, but you do have to be willing to work. And you do have to be willing to put some money forward. That's probably the thing. I mean, not probably. I know that's one of the things that held me back. I mean, now I'm publishing this next book and hopefully my future titles from a position of strength, so I can push forward and make sure that the launch is correct and the launch is done well and the buzz is handled right. But the first book, no, I mean, I didn't have any of that. I didn't do it correctly, which is really a testament to you know, when you got an advantage. I mean, my unfair advantage is the life I've lived, and I really leaned on that, and three really big interviews of me came out this year, so it made the book sell enough to where I was livable. Or at least where it contributed. I made a bit more money working in online sales, but I think my first year, I got my W-2s, or not W-2s, but 1099s, because you're contracted officially. I sold a little over $14,000 worth of books. And that is not bad at all, right? That's not like balling, but that's a self-published shoestring effort, man. That's 14 grand. That's what, like, you know?
And there's plenty of like college-educated writing major writers out there that haven't made 14 grand writing.
Exactly, you know, and I showed him, and I had to pay taxes on my writing earnings. Actually, I was really fortunate because it was my last year of school, and I was able to claim the Hope credit. And if you don't know what that is, nice. That gives you money for going back to school.
I know what it is. Yeah, because I did that when I was, because I went back to school when I was 33, married with 4 kids, working full time. And the tax benefits are.
Yeah. So.
Hey, sorry about that.
Oh, no problem, man. What was the last thing you heard? I was just walking by it.
I don't know. I just freaked out. I didn't know what happened. I think what happens in an hour is it cuts it off. So.
Ah, okay. That is that's reasonable. I guess we wouldn't have found that out last time, but.
Does the next book come out?
But whatever you want to, you know, you want to put a thing out there, you want to put a book out there. No, you can do it, and you're coming from a position of resources, because you definitely got to invest resources. I've already invested some in this, and I'm going to keep investing because I really believe in it. That's the thing. If you believe in it, you're not going to have a problem. It's not that I didn't believe in my first book. I mean, I literally just didn't have. I didn't have the money to make put a little for, but it's an investment. It's like building an asset. It's like a house, really, right? You know,
Yeah. So, like for me, I feel like, and I don't, you know, I said before, like I didn't want this to get super political. I try not to get political, though. You know, sometimes it seems unavoidable. But like for me, my message is, or the thing I think that's missing in the marketplace that people need to hear, is that those traditional values of hard work and sacrifice and family and commitment still matter and make a difference. And I think that there's a space, you know, I just feel like there's a space. Like I hear this comedian's going to write a book basically talking about how men are all evil. And I think, you know what, young men need to hear the opposite, that their natural masculinity is a positive trait and it can be used to achieve fantastic great things in the world. And you don't need to be ashamed. You don't need to be ashamed of yourself because you're a man. You know, you have responsibilities as a man. You need to fulfill those. There's nothing wrong with it.
I agree.
And I think it's a shame. I think it's a shame that there's so many young men who hear the opposite, you know, that they, these little kids being, you know, fed Ritalin in school because they're supposed to sit in a chair all day to, you know, men take the lead when they're interested in a young lady, like all these things, I think, you know, are hurting people. They don't know what to do. They're kind of like stuck. You know, you feel like, oh, what am I supposed to do? I think it needs to get out there. Like, no, not only is it right, but here's the, it has a purpose and it serves the greater good of our community. It's not just about what you want. You know, it's a lot of it is sacrifice and selflessness. But, you know, that's why. And that's
for sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what do I always say too, right? I can't remember the exact numbers I worked out, but we'll just use some that are close enough. There are 600 million English speakers, right? If you get only 1% of those, right? You get 6 million of them. That's 1% to be interested in your work. You know, you'll live good. If you get 0.1%, 100,000 of them, you still live good. You know, so.
Well, yeah, like you've got. I know, like on some of the social media stuff, like you've gotten the attention of some pretty big accounts, like Scott Adams. I noticed, you know, talks about you sometimes, and Jesse Kelly, like some of these bigger guys. Yeah,
it's really cool, man, because. Because now I have, and this is another thing about Twitter, and the real positive about social media, at least for people like me, and I've met a lot of other people like this, is you find out that you're not alone. You're not alone in how you think. Right. You're not alone in how you see the world. Right. You're not alone in what you want out of reality. It's just a different game once you, because look, for all intents and purposes, you know, the way I think and the way I see and the way I go after things is very different than everyone I know. I mean, I don't really have anyone to relate to at all in my immediate vicinity. But I have. But if I want to draw, like, if I got lonely, you know, I can think of four people I could be able to meet up with and say hello to for dinner. Up and down the Eastern Seaboard, right? But I'm busy working on stuff where I talk to people, or I'm teaching, or I'm training. I mean, it's just a different life. I mean, it's not. It's got to be. That is the beauty of using the platform correctly and not letting the platform usually you. I mean, you can use it to connect. You could be out there sharing silly cat videos and arguing with people. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's right. That's funny about the platform you use, because I'm always surprised. Like, I think the one thing that always surprises me, because I'm late to social media. I never really got into it. And then I kind of discovered Twitter, I guess, about a year ago. But the one thing that constantly surprises me is people get super emotional having a conversation.
Yeah,
with a stranger.
It's really weird. I'm not going to lie. Because not only is it a stranger, it's not even an actual, like, real-time picture voice. All the things that make a conversation, those things are missing in a Twitter interaction. There's no tone of voice. There's no body language. And people go off the rails, man. And really get engaged. Look, and I don't know what it is about human nature, because I know whatever it is that's intrinsic to our nature, because the same thing happens to me occasionally. The difference is I understand enough about this medium. Well, it's two things. One, I have so many followers now and so many notifications. I mean, I just can't keep track of things. If I see an offhanded comment, it really is by coincidence now, because I can't even keep track of the push notifications, like the people I follow who say things back. Right. But the other big thing is I'm very grateful and aware of the reality that I live in. So I try, you know, if it looks like it's getting crazy, I just get up and I go, hold up, man. What am I really, is this really what it's about to be worth? I'm in a position, I mean, I'm walking around my apartment in the middle of the afternoon. I got nothing to worry about. You know, all I got to do is just make sure I keep working and chugging along on my own goals, my own deadlines. No one can take my time. Why in the world am I going to let my day be ruined by by a troll. You know, who's got who offers no value. So,
right. Well, I do that. Like, I get up really early. So the only ones up are like me and my son. He's six. He just turned six. So he'll get up early, and I'll get up early, and my daughters and my wife will still be sleeping like on a Saturday morning. And I'll go on Twitter and see what's going on. Like, I'll get involved in some kind of fight that's going on for me. I'm just doing it for fun. And like, I get involved in it. And then like, he wants breakfast. So I'll put the phone down. And I go make it. Really? The girls get up. We go do all this stuff all day, whatever. Go work in the yard, come back. And like at night, after the kids go to bed, I'll pick the phone back up, check it on Twitter. You know, there's like 300 people involved in this argument that I ignored all day. Like, they've been fighting with each other. It's funny, man. I'm like, don't let it own your life.
And here's something cool, you know, in my unique experience so far, because now I've had what have I had? I guess I've had two points of real controversy in my social media blossoming career. Last year when I spoke at Lambda Conference, which is a tech conference, but they decided that I was a weird red pillar or something. Some people that had beef with the guy who put the conference on. So they were calling me out and giving me all kinds of grief. And then this year, you know, when it got announced that I was doing the seminar with Cernovic, people started acting crazy, trying to harass me. And here's what you learn going through this stuff. These people really, like, they really don't matter. I mean, they just exist in the digital space. No one has ever come up to me. No one's ever said anything to me. Once a thing has been squashed or I ignore it, then it's over. I mean, it is a really interesting, like, they just don't matter. Like, and once you when you learn that, you're like, wow, right. Here's how little people matter in this regard, who are on your page, and this is what you get to. I had an actual person I know in real life find out that I was doing a seminar, and they're all super liberal, and they're like, yeah, we can't be friends. And I was like, all right, cool. It was nice being your friend. And it really didn't bother me. I was like, what the? I really reflected on that because you know, I didn't lose a beat. I was just like, all right, man, it's been cool being friends. And I put a lot of effort into this person for some other things, helping them get ahead in their life. And I didn't feel any kind of way. I didn't write anything. I was like, cool.
Well, it's like, I teach my kids, because I have three daughters, you know, and they're, I got one in high school, one in middle school, one in elementary school, and there's all kinds of drama. I only had brothers growing up, so I never witnessed all this stuff. There's all kinds of drama all the time. And I always tell them, like, when somebody reveals to you that they never were really your friend, that's fine. You know, don't get upset. Just like, okay, yeah, right, now I know. You know, that's just how it is.
Because what it did for me. Say that again.
Somebody just said they don't want to be my friend or something stupid, then they were never really my friend. Like, whatever.
There comes a point, and it's just like you really realize, you know, becoming an adult, because I'm guessing if you got a daughter in high school, I'm guessing I'm younger than you. But I've learned coming up that you know, you can't even bother wasting your time trying to convert people. There's so many people on this planet that the energy that you would use to convert another human being into your page, why are you not going to be happy? They're not going to be happy. Just go find some like-minded people and enjoy your little, man. You might get 80, maybe 90 years on this planet, man. Have a good time.
Well, the other thing is, I think, like, so I'm like a libertarian sort of, I come from a different place, I think, than most people. So like, I think that people should be free to do what they want. I believe in liberty, low taxes, and I'm a Christian, and I sort of, that's part of my kind of worldview. I've never felt like super represented by politicians or the media or whatever. I think sometimes people are spoiled because they just feel like, you know, that they always are being reinforced in what they think by all these other people. And like, they're shocked anyone disagrees with them. Like, I'm shocked if anybody agrees with me, you know, like, but I don't know why. I get so upset when someone disagrees with you. It's no big deal. Somebody was telling me online the other day they were upset with Trump being president because he didn't represent them. I'm like, all right, well, I've never had a president.
Hey, people say, you know, not my president. I'm like, cool, man, move. And when you bring that up, then they get it's not that easy. I'm like, look here, if you really don't like your country, you'll do what it takes, but those people don't want to really do work, you know.
So Trump is president, or Obama's president, or Bush, or Clinton, whatever, and you don't like it. Okay, fine. Have you missed a meal yet?
Probably. No. They got to invent problems, man. It's a – that's the
– Well, it's like, just wait. Like, I didn't like Bush as a president. So, okay, fine. You know what? You just wait a while to get a new one. And I didn't like that one either. You wait a while to get a new one. Like, it's just life goes on, man. Just do your thing. But that's like we were talking about before, people make excuses to not succeed. It's like, stop worrying about something you can't control that isn't really impacting your ability to do anything. Like, just go out and do something. Get busy in something else. Why are you so worried about something that's happening far away that doesn't affect you?
Exactly, man. We are 100% on the same page with that. On that note, I have to start cooking dinner because I said I would cook dinner tonight. I think I'm going to go grab some steaks because they're easy to cook and they taste good. Hello?
Ed, I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Oh, no, no problem, man. I appreciate you talking to me. Sure. Yeah. All right, man. You enjoy your day. You too.
You too. Have a good dinner.